10:06. I've been asked after yesterday confessing my man crush on some of the mechanics over at Bucky's Auto Service Day. Take it down a notch. Yeah,
to clarify which ones.
Well, just no. They just said take down the whole, just a notch. The whole, if you can, you know, if you're anything like me. So straight ahead, here we go. Straight ahead, Reed. 16 locations. Been around since 1948. Bucky's Auto Service Center. Some of the best looking mechanics. Find a
find them all on Instagram.
Find out myself talking. Oh, my. I'm going to be hitting them up for a favor, by the way.
Good.
Yeah. So, my nephew got into this automotive school in Arizona, and he needs a little extra help. He's working like 24 hours a week at Jersey Mike's, but he needs a little extra cash in order to be able to make this thing. And we're throwing money in, and we're asking other people. I mean, Bucky's would be a good place.
Yeah.
Warning you guys now that an email is coming. Amazon reveals what typical U.S. workers are making with a minimum wage Trump. So they normally are pretty secretive. Amazon's really good about not talking to the press. People call over there all the time. They either have no comment or they don't return phone calls. But they, February or when was it that Amazon? Oh, no, it was prior to Christmas or something. Didn't Jeff Bezos say, hey, everybody, here's what we're going to do.
November 1st.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders was bashing away at him, talking about, oh, $1 billion. You can't get a plate of rice. They're on welfare. So Bezos comes along and says, hold on. We've heard what our critics have said. So we're going to move everybody up to $15. Minimum wage going to be $15. If you work at Amazon, that's where everybody comes in. Plus, we're going to give you health care and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we're going to give you stocks and we're going to give you retirement, blah, blah, blah. So that's he does this. And then he says, hey, and I challenge anyone else out there to do the exact same thing.
That's right. So today the news is just that the median pay of Amazon employees in the U.S. is just over $35,000 last year. And that's in response to the rise in minimum wage, which affects obviously the lowest level of Amazon employees. It had been $28,836 the year before. So there's a wage increase. If you say, heck, I think of Amazon people as making a heck of a lot more money than $35,000. Well, that's true. There are the techies that actually are cashing in, and they have, like, you know, six-figure salaries. But the people that work in the fulfillment centers and those in the warehouses, they bring down that average. And then Amazon wants to point out, in addition to that $35,000, what's not included in their compensation are medical benefits. They have retirement contributions, parental leave for, you know, new parents and that. So I guess they feel pretty good about it and suggest, hey, everybody else ought to, you know, try the $15 minimum wage as well. They also, I guess, by law, it's a required disclosure now to reveal the top executive's pay compared to that of the median employees.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, like the ratios. They brought that in a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the CEO pay ratio. It's 1 to 58 in 2018, which is an improvement. It was 1 to 59 in 2017. But this is interesting. The CEO of the organization that runs the warehouses and logistics operations, which is all the lowest paid employees, that CEO's ratio works out to 1 in 684.
Yeah.
But then he is in charge of.
But is it so? It's Bezos is the first one, 1 in 58, or what is that? What it was?
No, that's just for all the. So that's for all the employees. Right. Yeah, the Amazon CEO pay ratio.
Okay,
but they have a bunch of CEOs at it. So right. Just
because Bezos only pays himself like 80-some thousand.
Yeah, that's right, 81 or 86 thousand, something like that.
All right.
Okay.
I say then when I saw that, I kept thinking to myself, this is not a social justice victory. What Jeff Bezos is doing is like a guy who's got a metal plate in his head who's challenging you to a game of Russian roulette. And you spin the revolver, you spin the barrel a couple of times, and you don't kill yourself. And then he says, hey, let's up the ante. I'm going to stick another bullet in there. Now, you don't know that he's got a steel plate in his head. So you now are playing with two bullets. Chance of being killed, right, has now gone up. But you don't have what the other guy has. The advantage of having as much capital as Amazon has and having as much growth as Amazon has. When he challenges everybody else to raise to 15,
he can afford it.
Screwing Walmart. He is screwing anybody else he can possibly screw The guy is a businessman through and through. As he used to say, your margins are my opportunity. And if he can go the other way, which is to drive your expenses up, to shorten and tighten your margins, or cause you to have to increase what you charge, it betters for him. He's so, challenging everybody to take the second bullet in the head because he's got the metal plate.
So you're saying that this move was not altruistic?
Not at all, Tom. There's no such thing as altruism. But you need to read a little bit of Ayn Rand, however you pronounce your name.
Oh, my God, Ayn Rand, yes. Yeah. She's the worst. But still, have you tried to read her?
I thought I was the worst. Am I right behind her?
You both are up there on the pantheon
of worst.
There's
no such thing as altruism.
So the issue here, though, is didn't Walmart raise?
Yes.
They did, too.
They had to go up, too, and so did Target. And how are they doing?
I think they're probably doing fine.
They're struggling. Good for you, Jeff.
Online Trading Academy would tell me more, I suspect,
you
about
need to
how
get,
Walmart
you need,
works.
Just go to a power training workshop. There's probably one near you. Georgetown students vote overwhelming now. Georgetown University hasn't said that they will do this, but the students like the idea because they feel guilty because they're extremely rich and mostly either Asian or white. And they have voted overwhelmingly in favor of a $27 fee. Now, is this a yearly fee?
Per semester. It's $54 a year.
Okay. But when you're paying $65,000 to go there, what's another $27 on top? They want to take the money, and then the money would go into a fund of some sort that would then eventually make its way to the descendants of the slaves that were sold some, how many years ago? 400 years
200,
ago?
200 years ago to keep the university afloat. Uh-huh. And what's amazing about this, so reparations in general, it's being kicked around, that's kind of a generalized idea.
Right.
Georgetown, to their credit, I don't know, they keep good records, they know exactly who those slaves were, their names, their family. So you can literally take the money that is raised if this thing goes through and give them to the descendants of the actual slaves that were sold. So this is a kind of a direct link that the general notion of reparations doesn't have.
I got a couple sound bites here. Georgetown student newspaper. Is that one any good? Jacob explains how the student's incentive would work.
Yeah, that explains.
You like that one?
We kind
How about explains the reason some people voted no? How about that?
That was shorter.
There we go.
Firstly, the figure $27.20 is symbolic rather than calculated, which a lot of people have issue with because there's not been much math behind why the fee exists. Also, a lot of people are saying that the university has a responsibility to atone for its past, but not its students.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's one, I think, an interesting argument. Yeah, it wasn't the why should it be borne by the students? It was the institution. However, as you often are wont to say, if you hit up a business, it's just going to hit the customers anyway. If you think of the institution as the business and the students as the customers.
Right. How many of these kids are actually out of their own pocket paying for that Georgetown tuition? What do you think? What's another 27 on top, right? They're still in debt anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. There may be a lot of them on scholarship. But
the whole idea of reparations has been kicked around a lot. So CNN, Julian Castro, didn't he used to handle transportation? Is that what he was, or housing?
I think it was housing secretary.
Housing with Obama.
He's now running for president.
I heard that. Yeah, he says he's open to talk about it.
I believe that we have never fully addressed in this country the original sin of slavery. And that because of that, we have never truly healed as a country. Even though we weren't there in past generations, we've inherited a lot of moral assets. Mm. But you know what? We've also inherited some moral debts. Mm. And one of those debts that we've never paid is the debt for that original sin. So I support legislation that Sheila Jackson Lee, Congresswoman Jackson Lee from Texas, has introduced that would appoint a commission to study reparations.
Okay, so he's in favor of a study.
Yeah, but that's all, you know, the Conyers. So there's a bill that's introduced every year in Congress, started by John Conyers, Representative John Conyers from Michigan, I think in the, like, 89 or something. Uh-huh. Every year it's come up. All that calls for is to create a commission to study it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was thinking, if we actually went on the reparations route, it would be as complicated as Brexit is proving to be. I mean, how you actually, what would be
and what would
a
that
fair
do to
way?
The country? Well, that would break the country apart. I think it would break the country apart.
Well, I mean, that's why you have a commission to try to examine how could we do this without harming the country as a whole.
I mean,
it's tricky.
Well, what you could say is, I'll tell you what, this would break the country apart. Here's your check. ask for nothing else ever again. No affirmative action, nothing. No welfare, no nothing. We're even, up, goodbye. The thing about the exchange of a dollar is two strangers that hate each other. One has a product, another might have a service. There's an exchange of dollar. You don't really have to have any kind of personal relationship once the dollar takes place. You can see it happen when it comes to divorces. You see it happen when it comes to lawsuits. The person writes the check. They're done. They never want to talk to the person again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. I saw a great article in the Washington Post. The guy said, you don't slap a check down on the table 30 years after and give it to your sister who you used to pull her hair and punch her in the back and make her cry and make fun of her braces. You don't write a check in order to, like, solve that problem. It's done through a series of small abilities to be able to communicate with the other individual. And I would think if Lyndon Baines Johnson, wherever he's burning in hell right now, he's probably spinning in his grave wondering, well, hold on a second. We did this whole thing called affirmative action, which is institutionalized racism, and we put that in place. And then it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, I hope that someday we don't have to have this anymore. We've evolved to such a place that everybody is up and they all have equal opportunity and no one's held back by anything. But this guy's pandering for votes and he says, we'll look into it.
John, I don't know why.
It's a way of pandering, Tom. If he said no, he would have a difficult time with that crowd, right?
Ta-Nehisi Coates, one of the most brilliant African-American writers around right now, who's written all these essays, talked about reparations. Yep. It's something that's being discussed in serious circles. Now, how close it is to coming to reality is anyone's guess, but right now it is an issue, and it shouldn't be just dismissed as pandering.
I'm not dismissing. It is.
Oh, no, as pandering.
Tom.
So first off, it's a broad discussion. I think we could have a really interesting discussion, just the two of us, about the idea behind it. But secondly, I think I'm not going to let you get away with this burning in hell crack about Lyndon Baines Johnson. What the hell is
Why
that
not?
About?
LBJ was horrible to dogs, and he was a racist. And you don't LBJ, think he's in? Where do you think he is? Purgatory?
No, I think that, again, it depends on if the hierarchy of afterlives.
Yeah.
I have to adopt your terminology.
He's got to come back around as a dung beetle.
If he's still in purgatory, he's at the very top of purgatory. He's the next one to be let into heaven. You forget, the Great Society was one of the great ambitious efforts in this country.
Nothing enslaved black people more than Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Great Society. Here is your young mayor from Indiana or Ohio.
Go ahead. I want to hear you say his name, John.
Peter Balaghingi, yeah.
I would.
The other reason...
Oh, he's open to reparations as well.
I would. The other reason we need a commission is it will allow us to advance the conversation beyond the way it is being caricatured by many on the political right, who want to use it to arouse hostility to something that is being perceived as a check in the mail and is being perceived as something that will be unfair, right? They're going to stoke that. Say, well, who's it going to come from and who's it going to go to? It's exactly why we need a rigorous, serious study to say, okay, what would it actually mean to have real resources through whatever mechanisms of policy this country has to right those historic wrongs? And by the way, it's a very American thing to do. When something is broken, we ought to fix it.
What's broken?
Our history has put African Americans at a disadvantage that we've still not fully recognized. And I agree. I think giving a paycheck is not the solution to that.
Let me ask you this.
It's a philosophical sort of coming to, kind of a recognition of our past.
So what are we saying? You have a black American family, let's say it's a mom, couple kids, struggling. Is she struggling because of what happened 400 years ago? Or is she struggling because at the age of 18, she had a child? She did not graduate from high school. So she is just as poor. Hold on. She is just as poor as the white woman who's living in in Mississippi, who has two children that does not have a high school education. She's making the exact same amount of money. Now, let me ask you this. The white woman, is that because of choices that she made, or is that because of something that happened in slave times 400 years ago? I would say the bad choice, and sometimes people make choices without any sort of, it's no fault of their own. They have very few options.
That's right.
Same lady in West Virginia. It's dirt poor, fourth generation. She's stuck. Same way the woman stuck there in Detroit. She's stuck. Both of them are stuck. You can't turn around and say, because what happened 400 years ago has somehow shackled the black woman, but not shackled the white woman.
John, it's,
it gets down to choices, Tom, because if who's forcing?
Not only choices.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Because when you say 400, you make it sound like it happened so long ago.
I'll go 200 years ago.
That it's irrelevant. We had a civil war that dealt with a slavery.
Right.
And we had Jim Crow laws that happened in my lifetime.
That was the
Jim
government.
Jim Crow laws. That's right. And the government has to take acknowledgement. Believe me, the government allowed for slavery.
Yeah.
So that now the government needs to somehow address that and has the historical antecedents of African Americans in this country created the culture that they now live in.
Uh-huh.
And that is a huge historical and philosophical question that I think we can address as adults. And whether it comes down to a paycheck or not, I think, is too simplistic.
There's a great story about a Victorian nature writer by the name of Ernest Thomas Seton. And when his son turned 21 years old, the father had kept track of everything he had ever spent on the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And presented the kid with the bill. The kid looked at the bill, wrote his father a check, gave him the money that he needed, and never spoke to his father again. No, and never spoke to him again.
Okay.
Right. So that would divide the nation if you said, well, you know what? Okay, fine. My grandfather came over here from Ireland, had nothing to do with any of that, but I'll tell you what. So we'll write you a check. That's it. And you know what? I don't want to ever have to hear that you are somehow not being able to survive in this society. So there you go.
And
goodbye. There's your money. See you later.
It would only work if we thought that would have the kind of societal effects that were needed. If it just turns out to be a paycheck and all it does is antagonize things, that's not what the commission would then ultimately recommend, I suspect.
I guess the beauty is you could answer yes, which is basically, go ahead, look at it. And then you'd find out it would cost trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And then you say, well, let's just add that on to our grandchildren's already huge debt. By 10 years from now, the average American will owe $88,000, $88,000 to the federal government. So that's just going to be coming out of taxes 20 or 30 years from now. I feel sorry for people like Jacob, and I feel sorry for people like Andrew. I feel sorry for Jacob because he's going to have to pay more. Andrew, I just generally always feel sorry for. All right?
Thank you, John.
And right now, I bet neither of them that you feel sorry for would trade places with us right now.
Why is that?
Because they've got at least...
Andrew would trade with me in a minute.
They have a good 40 to 60 years of life
ahead
of them.
Don't be so sure.
Really?
I like my life. I'm fine with it.
There you go.
I'll tell you what. Let's switch lives for 1 week.
As an experiment?
Yeah.
Does Andrew gets to host the show?
You get to host the show. I run the buttons.
And
he gets my salary.
I don't know if I could do that.
All right. Believe me, you could do that better than John could use that board.
That's true. You're not allowed to tell me to sneak music in. All right. There's no substitute for print. Tom and I both agree with that. We'll get to that story. Plus, also, you pay more for ads that are next to stories that make you feel good. You think, well, that can't work. Oh, yeah, it does. Right back. Muckleshoot Bingo. Sure, that's the sponsor for the know-it-all quiz. That's where one person gets on the phone to gets on the air and wins fabulous tickets, including, let's see, this week's winner wins a chance to two tickets, the Seattle Opera's Carmen, Tom, starting at McCall Hall on May 4th. Carmen, May 4th, McCall Hall. Two tickets go to you.
Oh, that's great. That's one of the most popular operas ever.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they're doing it there, starting on May 4th, McCall Hall. Okay, let's see. That's the know-it-all quiz brought to you by Muckleshoot Bingo. Story that I enjoyed, a guy from Atlantic. I'm going to read one of his books because he seems like a pretty clever writer. He's got a couple books, The Fools Named Fools, Land of Lincoln, and the one I think I'm going to is Crazy You, The Dad's Crash Course on Getting Your Kid into College.
Is that right?
Yeah, I like the way this guy writes.
Yeah.
And he also
has a
special place in our heart, Tom, because he talks about the fact that he decided to do an experiment one day, and he filled out a subscription and sent it in, and he then would wait a couple of days for the newspaper, actual paper,
that's right,
to arrive in a bag on his driveway. He says he enjoys it so much, going and getting the paper and reading it, he doesn't even know why he did the experiment in the first place.
Exactly. And it happens to be the Wall Street Journal, but he says it could have been any of a dozen newspapers, your local newspaper or, you know, some of the other fine national publications. It happens to be, for him, the Wall Street Journal. And he talks about, it's a bit like The things that people didn't like about vinyl records, because you could hear that hiss and the pop sometimes. Well, now people that love vinyl love it for the hiss and the pop. He says the things that people object to about the newspaper are the very things that he happens to like. And if he talks about, first off, newspapers have a ritual to them. And he acknowledges he's a certain age, so he used to do this, and so he's revisiting the ritual. Yeah. He says, the fetching of the paper, he thinks is this great first ritual of the morning that he goes out. Now, he's much more ritualistic than I am. He puts on a bathrobe, and then he puts on his slippers, and then he goes out onto the into the yard, picks up the paper. But he says, the great thing is that it's always associated with a steaming cup of coffee as he sits down. He plumps his reading chair as he sits down in this. And then you do a quick scan of the front page to get all the sense of the news, and then you go through and you look at the individual columnists you want. He just talks about the joys of literally reading a physical manifestation of the news.
Yes.
Now, here's where I think it gets interesting philosophically. He says, and here's the great thing and the frustration for people that don't like newspapers. He says, the world is suddenly still. All the world news is there before him, and he's not bombarded with ads coming up. Hey, would you like to buy a new pair of slippers? I noticed they were a little shaggy. And it doesn't come up with breaking news things. Yeah. It's all just set. And he says, there is a sense that, wow, if I consume this newspaper, I will know the complete story of the world, and that world will not change for 24 hours
until
the next newspaper arrives. And he says, there's something so, it's like the stillness they talk about in poetry, where if you can just kind of sit down and really sort of focus. And he says, that sense of completion that he has the entire world in his hands. Mm. And he says, now all of that illusion goes away when he actually gets into work and he has to get back on his computer. But he says, the joys of that are missing from most people's lives. And he says, and the thing is, they won't miss it. Like Jacob probably has never sat down and read a newspaper like that. And so he might just be frustrated. This is old news. This is 16-hour news I'm reading, and not be able to revel in it the way he revels in it.
I stopped having the Wall Street Journal delivered, and I don't know why it faded, but I read it on my phone. When I read this guy's article, I want to get back my paper. Sunday, so I got it all the way down to just Saturday Wall Street Journal. The Saturday Wall Street Journal has a couple of things that the other ones don't have.
That's right.
It has a
art section. It's fantastic.
Which always has really cool articles about culture and music and theater, and that's great. Plus, it also shows like where rich people live. That section.
It's called Mansions.
Right, but they're all for sale. You can turn them back and see where they live and stuff. That's sort of fun. But just generally, in fact, when my son turned graduated from eighth grade, I gave him a subscription to the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Because I said there's no better paper in the world to succeed than the Wall Street Journal, because it has all this knowledge in it. But you're right, the philosophical point of everything frozen and stopped in time, and you think, well, that's all I need.
Yeah.
That's all I need. But to me, the paper and news is almost like a buffet. It's all you can eat. So you feel constant. Well, I should probably go up another helping. What do I need another helping for? That bow tie pasta looks good. I'm like, what am I eating that for? Oh, because it's there. Right? Yeah. So you just keep going. And then you have this sort of sense of like, geez, I'm starting to feel hungry while I'm already sitting here.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You just think that the food's not going to be there again. I love the fact that he slows his life down and stops it. Good for him.
You know? Yeah, so it's a very nostalgic piece, and my guess is it probably doesn't relate to people,
They don't know what they're missing because they never had it in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah. And then finally, the other little story that goes along with this fact, the New York Times decided they would ask, I don't know how many people, hey, would you do us a favor? We're going to give you 18 different emotional reactions to a story. We want you to tell us how you feel after reading the story. They got a bunch of points on a scale, data scale, and then they were able to determine people felt this way when they read this story and this way when they read this story. If they feel this way, let's put an ad next to that story that will most likely turn into them making
that
a purchase because of the feeling they have.
They capitalize on the emotion of the story. So if a story is one of uplift and triumph, then you can do some kind of thing that'll make you feel good, or you know, give you a sense of accomplishment in the ad. And they give a sample example, an article about Cher. Cher has never been a huge Cher fan, but she loves being Cher. And the people's response to that, they said they thought it was adventurous, inspired, amused, happy, and love were the things. And so they figured out what kind of ads can they put with that to increase the productivity? And they said it had unbelievable effect. They end up getting 150,000 data points, on, you know, about varying strong emotional resonances. And they say out of that, it generated as much as 80% more impressions because of that. The average lift is about 40%. So you get, because of that, you get 40% stronger reaction to the ad based on the articles. And these are all articles that they're going to be printed in the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
So it's clearly just marketed to New York Times. And they say, could you do this? Could this, is this applicable across the board for any magazine or newspapers? And they said, probably not, just because it's so intensive that you have to have the money, you have to have the back, the sort of the financial wherewithal to be able to pull this off. Mm-hmm. And they say New York Times is one of the few they think.
Does New York Times now begin to have articles? Does he ask the writers to write articles that will turn into?
See, now that is the danger of danger right. story. They claim no, that this is a separate situation. But yes, what if it turns out that your ads zoom because we need more celebrity news? Would they go to celebrity news because of the distinction between the editorial and the marketing? The suggestion is not.
Oh, that yeah, there's
but
a,
not yet. There's a is maybe
high a, wall between them.
So you don't think so?
No, if you have a choice between two different articles, you're the editor, and you realize this one's going to generate X amount of dollars, you do that one, you probably say, hey, do that story instead.
Yeah. See, I think the New York Times, there may not be that many newspapers that feel this way, but they feel like they are the newspaper of record, and so I think that they
Didn't
would
they
be
hire a plagiarist?
Loath to do that. Well, I think, I mean, just about everybody's hired a plagiarist. The New Republic had a plagiarist. I mean, there are a lot of people that, and they're always trying to ferret those
What do
those
you think is
going to
happen
out.
To all those media outlets when Trump leaves office?
Do you think, see, I
The amount of money that the Post and the Times and CNN and any other network cables made off Donald Trump is crazy.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a good
No
thing.
Other president in the last 100 years has dominated the media every single day, every single hour. There seems to be a Donald Trump story.
That
just 20 minutes ago, he made news again.
That's right, because he's coming back and saying, hey, Stephen Miller isn't wrong. I'm going to bring back that ridiculous idea of his. But my argument is, just because he's dominating the airwaves does not mean, or the headlines does not mean, that there wouldn't be headlines of better, more interesting stories perhaps without Trump. It's just that Trump is so
CNN
flashy.
CNN has made so much money off of Trump,
well,
right?
Newspapers, I think, are slightly different. Cable news does play by different rules. The newspapers, I think, are still going to have to do the serious work, and there may be more investigations of Trump because of Trump's kind of flamboyant
the media
ways.
Hates him.
But
they can
well, I mean, why do they hate him? You're telling
well,
me. The bottom line is they love him.
My argument is they
wouldn't waste their time on these kind of the ridiculous gestures of the president, and they would do real serious journalism if they didn't have somebody so distracted.
I am three chapters in on Matt Taibbi's Hate Incorporated.
Oh, really?
How the media separates
Taibbi.
Yeah, he is a poo boy. Not a kind word for anybody that's a bunch of ink. Here we go. We'll take a fast break. Come back. Tom's going to the movies. Online Trading Academy text line 98973. Shazam! We're going to talk about Shazam.
Well, that was last week, John, thanks for remembering. How's that? No, this is a very different work of art. There's not any big commercial movie, so I decided to go very esoteric. The movie is called High Life, and it's a work of art. And it's a work of art that you really have to work at to appreciate, since it makes very few concessions to its audiences regarding storyline or characters. In fact, you spend most of its 110 minutes just trying to make sense of what's going on. In the end, there are still gaps in your understanding, but you do realize the movie does have a commercially viable premise and its characters had the potential to be real box office draws. It's just that the film is simply not interested in cashing in that way. It would rather provoke discussion, which it does, than offer up clever plot twists or romantic tensions and character arcs to satisfy expectations. High Life is an art film with a capital A. Now, that should come as no surprise to anyone familiar with the work of the auteur Claire Denis. She spent decades making esoteric films in French, and she's staying true to form with High Life, even though it's in English, stars a British movie star, and is set in outer space. All personal firsts for her. It's the latter aspect, I imagine, that surprises most Denis fans, but she's quick to say that, despite the setting, it's really more like a prison movie than a sci-fi flick. That sounds more like Denis. That's an apt remark given that the spaceship the movie is set on is filled with convicts. We eventually figure out that the dozen or so people on board were all either on death row or facing life sentences down on Earth. They were given the chance to go on a mission to the far reaches of outer space.
There's scum, trash, refuse that didn't fit into the system. Until someone had the bright idea of recycling us. Serve science.
Recycling people to serve science. That sullen voice belongs to actor Robert Pattinson, the heartthrob of the Twilight films. He's one of the last surviving criminal astronauts. Through a series of flashbacks, we learn about their double mission. One, to find an alternative energy source via a black hole. And second, to experiment with artificial insemination in space. Oscar winner Juliette Binoche plays the insemination doctor who clashes with Pattinson's character because he refuses to provide samples for her tests.
I just don't understand how you can still believe in your Class 2 mission. It's like you become a shaman of sperm. It's just a new religion for you.
Because I'm totally devoted to reproduction. Happy monk.
Things, for the most part, go from bad to worse. It becomes clear that it's more of a suicide mission than anything else. But at one point, a baby is born. Is that the silver lining in an otherwise grim existence? Is Claire Denis somehow getting at the essence of our humanity? Or is life in the face of death a fool's errand, given the prospects? Mull those questions over as you leave the theater, why don't you? The ironically titled High Life might be better called Bleak in Space, or Despair in Space, or Grim Eroticism in Space. No, I've got it. Bleak Erotic Despair in Space. Now that should sell some tickets. And you can find the full review on MyNorthwest.com, John.
And you decided to do a small film because there's no big films are being done now.
That's right, yeah. This is a chance to zero in. Claire Denis is not somebody that the commercial audiences tend to know, but my guess is 50 years from now, 100 years from now, she'll be remembered long after most of the popular commercial filmmakers won't be.
100 years from now, no one will remember anybody.
I did have one quick question about this one.
Oh, there's sure. Jacob with a question.
Yes.
When I saw the trailer for this movie, I did not recognize this person, but my friend pointed out that Andre 3000 is
yes,
in this movie.
Yes, he's in it too. Andre Benjamin.
Is it a good performance?
Is in it, yes. It's not the lead role. Robert Pattinson, and a lot of people might dismiss him because, oh yeah, he's that guy from Twilight. He's really turned into a great actor. He does a lot of indie and foreign film types things. And yeah, Andre 3000 is in the movie, and he's one of the doomed astronauts. Beyond that, I don't want to give too much away. But it's a head-scratcher throughout.
That sounds painful after a while. Yes. Wouldn't there be some bleeding and some scabbing that would go on?
It's frustrating, but satisfying in the end.
So if you are going to scratch your head, switch sides.
Lean left.